Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. As a June 18th deadline for citizenship registration passed in the Dominican Republic, neighboring Haiti braced itself to receive hundreds of thousands of people in a mass deportation program that has sparked global outrage. In 2013, the Dominican Republic decided to revoke the citizenship of anyone foreign-born after 1929 and then made onerous requirements to prove their citizenship before the deadline. Those people of Haitian origin were particularly targeted as part of a long-standing tension between black and brown-skinned Dominicans. Dominicans of Haitian descent who may have lived in the DR for generations were counted in the same group as Haitian migrants, some of whom were trafficked into the DR as cheap labor. Haiti itself, the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere, may now be a new home for hundreds of thousands of people, many with no direct cultural or language connection to Haiti. On Sunday, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio gave an address in Washington Heights near the heart of the city's Dominican community and said, quote, "It is clearly an illegal act. It is an immoral act. It is a racist act by the Dominican government." After months of complacence, the international community and media shone a spotlight on the planned deportations. My guest is Roberto Lovato. He is a writer for The Nation and a visiting scholar at UC Berkeley's Center for Latino Policy Research. And he just returned from a trip to the border between the Dominican Republic and Haiti. Welcome to Uprising, Roberto.
Glad to be with you, Sonali.
Now, what has happened since June 18th? That was the official deadline. Have the deportations begun?
Well, I mean, deportations, we have to remember, never stopped. The Dominican government's been deporting Haitians for some years now. They're actually in the midst of building their deportation system, which really only started in 2007, and oddly enough, with the help of the United States government, believe it or not.
So this particular wave of mass deportations, however, has there been a surge in existing deportations as a result of this law that was and court decision in 2013?
Well, there's been intensified activity by the state, by the military, which is very active in immigration matters, and by CESFRONT, which is the Dominican Border Patrol. I've spoken to folks at Solidaridad Fronteriza and Centro Bono and other organizations advocating for Haitian rights. And there's definitely been an uptick in not just deportations, but in rape of women, of going to people's homes and creating havoc, destroying their property, taking it, stealing it. There's been a lot of corruption. There's been just a really, really sad situation. So there's been an increase in that, but what didn't materialize were the mass deportations that the right-wing media, which is abundant in Dominican Republic, and some government officials were promising. And that seems to me to be the real story right now. Not so much what happened, but what are they actually doing? And my own sense is that they're basically Obamifying immigration in the Dominican Republic. And because you have to remember, again, who trained CESFRONT? It was the two agencies primarily responsible for the most massive deportation system in our lifetimes. The Border Patrol, the U.S. Border Patrol, and the Department of Homeland Security provided training to CESFRONT, to the Dominican military. And so I'm sure that these are very smart people when it comes to doing these really awful things, and they're going to do it slowly.
Obamifying immigration. So essentially what you're saying is that in order to escape the international condemnation, because there has been a spotlight, they're probably going to try to get it under the media radar, perhaps wait until some of the outrage has subsided.
Yeah, I went to I'll give you an example. I went to one of these they're calling them shelters, but, you know, let me put that in quotes. Mm-hmm. They're really like immigrant prisons, just like, you know, I was in Karnes County, Texas, and they call those family residential centers.
Right.
You know, there's there's similarities in terms of the rhetoric and the way that they're trying to soften the blow of the slow deportation machine. So, when I say Obamifying, I mean, I think that you know, the U.S. has provided them with equipment, has provided them with extensive training in how to search and rescue, but also how to identify suspicious people. And so there's a massification of making Haitian suspect in the Dominican Republic, perhaps from the beginning of the state, because
right,
the state itself has identified itself as being anti-Haitian.
Well, let's talk about specifically who is being impacted. And I briefly described it as a mix of Dominicans of Haitian ancestry who've been living there for generations, many of whom speak Spanish and not French, Spanish being spoken in the Dominican Republic, French and Creole in Haiti, and some, you know, many of them having never visited Haiti even, as well as migrants who either might have been trafficked into the Dominican Republic from Haiti as cheap labor, or people who simply immigrated to find better circumstances. Does that cover it? What is the group being impacted?
Well, there are different groups being impacted. And I think the media in the Dominican Republic and in the U.S. have gotten it very, very wrong. Immigration in the Dominican Republic, like in the United States, is a very complex field of law. So, you know, just like in the U.S., you have Dream Act students, you have ag workers, you have, you know, H-1B visa holders who are kind of, some of them tech people, some of them are different. You know, you have different categories of migration. You have different kinds of people being impacted in different ways in Haiti. The one that's the most disturbing, in my view and in the view of international human rights lawyers that I've spoken with in the UN and other agencies, are the people made stateless, the people who have been denationalized, effectively having the Dominican Constitutional Court, the highest court in the land, in 2013 declare that if your family came after 1929, you are effectively not a Dominican citizen, and thereby taking away what's known as jus soli, you know, which means that you're, you know, the right to be a citizen of the place you were born in. So they've taken away the citizenship of hundreds of thousands of people.
And so some have called them stateless people. Is that accurate?
Oh, well, there's a process going on right now. There's a number of people who are right now are de facto stateless because the Haitian and Dominican governments have failed to process their papers, give them their documents. I mean, we see this kind of stuff in the U.S.
Right.
So just imagine in offices like the ones I saw down there that don't even have electricity in some cases, that don't have infrastructure, they don't have personnel.
So the Dominican Republic government is able to say, look, if you just have your papers in order and we, you know, then you can abide by this law and stay in the country. But what you're saying is that even, first of all, I understand the requirements to get those papers were very onerous. And second, even for those who might have been able to gather them, they aren't being processed. And I also understand that, you know, clearly the government can't target, you know, ask everybody in the country for their papers. And so they've been selecting who to ask. And they've been doing that by picking people whose names sound Haitian. And that has been described as ethnic cleansing.
Well, there's been a history of racially profiling and discriminating people of Haitian descent from even before the big massacre in 1937. Like I said earlier, the Haitian state itself, I mean, the Dominican state itself was built up in contrast to blackness, in contrast to Haitianness. I mean,
right.
Some people talk about how Catholicism, militarism, and anti-Haitianism are the defining characteristics of the Dominican state. So this has deep, deep roots. It's showing its new forms. It's like in the United States, you know, racism has changed over years and it's codified in different ways, and it's including through immigration. So we're watching a kind of a codification of anti-Haitian racism, I think, through different means. And again, it's not just the stateless people, the potentially stateless people. There's people who are just, you know, good old fashioned undocumented people who are being, you know, hunted down and you know, asked to leave. Again, they're not being loaded up on buses or put in concentration camps, as many people were kind of, I think, hyperbolically putting out there. But there are deportations. There is racial profiling. I mean, does this sound familiar to anybody?
And of course, I think you're right to point out that this is part of an ongoing continuum, not something sort of a new chapter in relations between the two countries. And just to set the stage for those who might not be as familiar with the sort of geographic and historic situation, essentially, the Dominican Republic and Haiti are two countries on the same island, the island of Hispaniola. One country, Haiti, being primarily African origin and black, and speaking French, a former French colony, also the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere. The other country on that same island, primarily brown-skinned, Spanish-speaking, and a lot wealthier. And so there are long-standing historical tensions that governments have used and fueled. Now, at this point, what do you make of the international response to this? Has the U.S. responded? Has the U.N. responded? Media coverage was initially scant, but then finally began to pick up greatly. What do you make of the fact that there finally has been some international coverage of this issue?
Well, I think that if we hadn't had that tragedy in Charleston, I think it would have gotten a lot better coverage. Nonetheless, there's been significant coverage, and there's been significant condemnation from even Amnesty International and children's organizations around the world.
Bill de Blasio.
Bill de Blasio, the el gran ausente, the one who's shined for his absence in saying anything about this, is Barack Obama.
Right.
There's been statements by the U.S. government kind of condemning what's happening, but you don't see anything along the lines of what happened in the case of the Rohingya in Myanmar. You got to remember that Obama was very forceful and outspoken in that very problematic issue. But when it comes to black people, just right down the street, across the Caribbean street, nada. And I mean, this is why I mentioned, it's probably because they'd be condemning themselves, because my sense is that the Obama administration is doing in Dominican Republic what it's doing in Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, which is extending the U.S. border out beyond the normal, quote unquote, frontier that these folks have, that we know, like in Tijuana or Reynoso or Brownsville. They're extending the U.S. border because they're concerned that migrants will come to the United States. That's the pattern you're seeing in the Americas, and I think around the world, where the U.S. is playing a very aggressive role in helping shape immigration policies of nations far less equipped, far poorer than it, in its own self-interest. So again, the some of the equipment being used is made in the U.S. Some of the funding made in the U.S. through different programs. The training in how to racially profile people is being provided by our good friends at the U.S. Border Patrol.
Wow.
So we know their record on racial profiling. Just go to Arizona, here in California, actually anywhere in the U.S. now, you are subjected to certain treatment if you look a certain way, because this is precisely the training that people are getting. It's not just arbitrary. There's a training that takes place. There's a training that takes place among police in the United States. Oh, and by the way, the country, the island of Hispaniola, was called by the indigenous people Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have these. I mean, it's a tragic but really fascinating example of the workings of race and statehood that we're watching. And
now, Roberto, during your trip there late last week, what sort of conversations did you have with people who might be facing this deportation? But also, did you get a chance to talk with Dominicans? What is the sense among ordinary Dominicans? Are they in favor of what is happening? Are they ashamed of what their government is doing? Is there any kind of political organizing within the Dominican Republic against this?
Well, the first thing I did was to talk to Dominicans of Haitian descent, who are precisely the people being impacted, who are being denied their right to Dominican identity. I mean, I spoke to a young 26-year-old student who told me this phrase. I think it was like, estoy viviendo una muerte cívica. I'm living a civic death. In other words, I have no rights. I can't go to the university. I can't get a loan. I can't get a job. I can't vote. I can't do anything, even though I was born here. You know, that's kind of like Ann Coulter's dream being lived in the Dominican Republic right now. So I spoke to Haitians who were undocumented. I spoke to Dominicans, and you know, unlike what the media is telling you about Dominicans, Dominicans come in different political and racial kind of shades, so to speak.
Right, they're not uniformly brown, obviously. But
yeah, and the racism of the Dominican state is coloring the entire Dominican kind of diaspora and community, which is sad because there are great protests in New York and other cities led by Dominicans in these cities. And inside of the Dominican Republic, there are many Dominicans who are adamantly opposed to this. Of course, we have to say there is also a significant portion of people who, you know, through the workings of history and culture and quote-unquote tradition, have adopted these very racist attitudes. I've spoken to people who were like of different skin tones, light, some really dark-skinned people. And I got, you know, these people who in the United States would be defined as black, sounding like they were white people condemning the Haitians, adopting all these racist attitudes. And so it's very nuanced and complex, the racial dynamics. And I mean, even thoughtful people like, what's his name at Harvard, Skip Gates, are really kind of, I think, not doing us a favor by some of the statements that they're making, by these blanket statements about Dominicans. We're getting it wrong, not just about the different kinds of Haitians that are being impacted, some of whom are actually Dominicans being impacted that happen to be of Asian descent. But we're also getting it wrong as far as, we don't say all quote unquote Americans are racist. We don't even say that all white people are racist. I mean, unless you're like somebody that believes in white supremacy, and you know, I'm not going to go into that right now, but
yeah. Well, I appreciate your analysis, Roberto, and I get what you're saying. I want to also mention that you wrote a piece in The Nation entitled It's the Day Without Haitians in Dominican Republic, which we will post a link to on our website, uprisingwithsonali.com, later today. Thank you, as always, for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
Roberto Lovato is a writer for The Nation and a visiting scholar at UC Berkeley Center for Latino Policy Research. And we'll be following up on the story as it progresses. This is Uprising. When we come back from this break, Malina Abdullah of Black Lives Matter joins us. Stay tuned.